Face the hammer.
Sometimes the news can just be downright depressing. Geez, another week and another round of terror attacks in Europe from radical Muslims. Hello, everybody. I'm Alex Thorson with Thor's Hammer Radio. You can catch me on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson at Thor Hammer Radio. Find me on Facebook, Thor's Hammer Radio, and also Minds.com at Thor's Hammer Radio. Wow, we had a round of terrorist attacks from Muslims in Europe, which has been going on for a long time now. It's really ramped up with ISIS. Thankfully, ISIS is on the verge of defeat ever since Trump became president, and we've actually been unleashing our military. But unfortunately, in terms of Europe, with the mass migration, well, there's a lot of ISIS or ISIS-affiliated terrorists which are already in Europe. Take, for example, Barcelona, that happened in which 13 people were murdered by these sickos who decided to run down another truck of peace in Barcelona, Spain. And in fact, that was a part of a greater set of attacks. They have uncovered evidence that they were going to have a massive bombing campaign, basically. They had more attacks planned, but they didn't get to it, thankfully. There was also an attack in Finland. In a place, see if I can pronounce this, Turku, Finland, in which one Moroccan nut job shouted Allahu Akbar, of course, and went on a stabbing spree, targeting women specifically, and two women were killed in that. And there was another attack in Russia as well, Surgut, Russia, another knife attack, in which a guy who pledged allegiance to ISIS in some video, he just stabbed street passersby at random, and then was shot dead by police. And there was also an attempted terror attack in a place called Tapuac Junction. It's in Israel, in Judea, which is most of the time referred to as the West Bank, but it's the province is Judea. And I don't think he killed anybody, but he tried to stab a border policeman, then he was shot and killed. And he was a Palestinian, of course, Palestinian nationalist. But this is what we come to. It seems every damn week, there's a terrorist attack in Europe by ISIS or other radicalized Muslims. And certainly in Israel, it happens all the time. Well, first I'll get into Finland, in Turku, Finland. So it was a Moroccan man, an 18-year-old, named Allahu Akbar, Durka Muhammad Jihad. I don't care what his name is. He can rot. But he went to stab women, specifically. That's who he was after. And he ended up stabbing and killing two women, one in her mid-50s and the other in her early 30s. And there were six other women who were injured, and along with two men who rushed and tried to protect them. Police and intelligence agencies had gotten a tip about Mr. Allahu Akbar, Durka Muhammad Jihad, earlier this year! Well, gee, we haven't seen this one before. Hey, we had warning about him, but we decided to, ignore it. This is from the New York Times I'm reading off of. He was not one of some 350 people whom Finnish authorities have been monitoring as potential security threats. Even though there was a warning that he might harbor extremist views, but the tip was not given priority because it was too vague. But you can thank Angela Merkel and the European Union and Europe's open borders. In fact, Nigel Farage just came out right and said this, that this is exactly what it's led to. And he's right. He's 100% right. And of course, Barcelona, that's the big one. So Barcelona, there were 13 people that were murdered. And this is from ABC News, an Islamist militant cell. So this was not just a lone wolves. No, this was a militant cell. Had planned one or more several major bomb attacks, possibly against churches or monuments, one of the suspects told a court of law. So again, this was not just the van, the truck of peace. I love seeing the reports that came out that said a van plows in or a van runs down. The van wasn't radicalized. It was the people, it was the assholes driving it. This is why we keep calling it, you know, trucks of peace or vans of peace. Because the news always reports it as if the van has a mind of its own and ran over people. What's sad is that as soon as this came out, as soon as I saw the little news alert that a van ran down people in Barcelona, Spain, I knew instantly that this was an Islamic terrorist attack. Now, it's not because I'm Nostradamus or prediction gurus. No, it's because this happens so frequently that, well, there you go. They had four suspects, mainly young Moroccans. Wow. So, yeah, that's where they're coming from North Africa. And has been exposed, there's like this migrant ferry, this basically human trafficking operation, that's coming from North Africa and going right to Italy in a lot of places, but other areas of the southern coast of Europe there. But so this cell not only wanted to run people down, it wanted to blow up stuff. And in fact, two of the places in which they were preparing bombs actually blew up and killed a couple of these assholes. Good. Oh, killing, one of them killed an imam. Huh. See? It's not just, you know, these young displaced men. No, you've got religious leaders involved in this shit. And of course, the media, the idiot Democrat media, in almost no instance will say radical Islamic terrorists. They won't say it. They're the first ones to run to the microphone and say, hashtag not all Muslims. Let's not judge or say Muslims, and certainly don't condemn all. But of course, for Charlottesville, it's all white people. All white people are white supremacists, especially all conservatives and Republicans. Yeah, you condemn them strongly for Charlottesville, for the actions of one guy, one domestic terrorist lowlife, who should get the death penalty. I hope. But we'll see. Justice will do its course. But again, the same people that will paint all conservatives and Republicans aligned with his actions of this one nut job in Charlottesville. But when it comes to Islamic terrorism, any kind of leftist terrorism, no. It's individualistic. You can't tie it to them. These people need to get their act together. And the worst one, this is CNN right here. Wolf Blitzer and this moron Jim Sciutto, who used to be in the Obama administration. This right here just was unbelievable. You know, roll that clip, play it.
And it's something that not just Spanish authorities, but U.S. authorities have been aware of. But the final point I would make, Wolf, is just this note that in light of the uproar of the last several days, 5 days apart, you have a white supremacist in Charlottesville use a vehicle to kill. And here you have attackers, at least following the modus operandi of terrorists using vehicles apparently to kill as well. Those shared tactics that should be alarming.
Yeah, and there will be questions about copycats. There will be questions if what happened in Barcelona was at all a copycat version of what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, even though there may be different characters, different political ambitions.
No facts at all. Pure speculation. Good Lord. A chimpanzee face-rolling a keyboard does better journalism than CNN. Are you fucking joking? First of all, the Islamists have been using vehicular attacks for a long time now. Maybe they missed the London Bridge attack. Maybe they missed Nice, France. The Islamists, ISIS, and other radicalized Muslims, they don't have to look at what happened in Charlottesville to know how to kill people. And vice versa, the nut job who did that in Charlottesville and other clowns, they don't need to look at ISIS to see how to kill people either. This is unbelievable. This came out just after, actually I believe it was going on like as the Barcelona events were unfolding. No facts at all. Pure speculation. And that's from Jim Sciutto, who's one of the chief correspondents there over at CNN. He used to be a staffer for the Obama administration. He's considered one of like their top thinkers at CNN. And the other guy that came on in the end was Wolf Blitzer, who's one of their primary anchors, one of their primary talking heads. And this is their journalism. This is, well, it's not journalism, I can tell you that much. Oh, and CNN gets even worse. They're out literally defending this communist Antifa group. They're making excuses for them. They're actually making excuses for why they're committing violence. They're justifying it. And I'll get into this later in the second segment of my program, but CNN has essentially turned themselves into a left-wing terrorist propaganda network. And you know what? I'll roll into that in my next segment, coming up right here after the break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the first segment and talking about the terrorist attacks that have occurred. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Well, I see Michael Moore's back at it, leading a protest on Trump Tower, and of course blaming Trump for Charlottesville. You know, Michael Moore should actually practice the socialism that he preaches and redistribute his fucking weight. Hello everybody, I'm Alex Thorson, back with Thor's Hammer Radio. Well, now into this segment, I'm going to get into Antifa and also the alt-right. So the media went nuts after Trump condemned both sides. Because, you know, to condemn both is to defend one of them. What the hell is that? That's not even an argument. That's not even sensical at all. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, that if you condemn both, you're protecting one. That's completely stupid. But the reason why the media is doing this, and the leftists in general, is because they agree with the alt-left, a term which Sean Hannity coined and Donald Trump now has made famous. So the alt-left, which are these Antifa communists, Black Lives Matter, and these other radical leftist groups, they commit a lot of violence. And the left is okay with that. They sympathize with them. And the alt-right, well, here's what they're doing. They want you and I to side with the alt-left and go completely against the alt-right. Me personally, well, I don't like both of them. And you and I should not be forced to choose between a false dichotomy here, one or the other. No, that's not how it works. How about both these groups suck ass, and I don't want to do anything with either of them? Both sides are un-American and can get lost, as far as I'm concerned. No, we're Americans. We choose Team America. We don't choose alt-left and alt-right. We choose Team America. And so who are these groups? Well, on the one hand, you've got the alt-right. And not the Hillary Clinton version of alt-right or the leftists that want to paint anyone to the right of Joseph Stalin as alt-right. No, that's not who the alt-right are. The alt-right is a racial identitarian movement for white people. It's a collectivist group. And as is true with most of these identitarian collectivist groups, they thrive on this victimhood mentality. See, what they do is they take all of this anti-white racist crap that the social justice warriors have been doing, and they thrive on it because they can point to what the SJWs and the left in general, what they're doing with regards to all this anti-white stuff, the you have white privilege this and white supremacy that, blah, blah, blah. They use that to bring in these disenfranchised young white men. They breed on their resentment, and they bring them into the movement. And it's this white racial identitarian movement, this collectivist movement. And it's actually very a small movement. But it's gaining popularity because of the push that the leftists are doing. And I covered this in my last podcast. And just to give you an idea of why this is the case, think about it this way. Back during the days of segregation and Jim Crow and lynching and the Klan and all of that, what did that lead to? Well, in addition to Martin Luther King, you also had the black nationalist and black separatist movements. You had like the Malcolm X types, the Louis Farrakhan, Nation of Islam, the Black Liberation Army, and Joanne Chesimard. In other words, they played upon the resentment from these black men and black women And they had legitimate grievances back during those days, but they played upon that resentment, and then look at what you ended up with. And by the way, the same damn political party responsible for all of that back in the past, segregation, Jim Crow, the Black Codes, the Klan, the Trail of Tears, the Japanese internment camps, that's all in the Democrat Party. And now look, the same damn party is doing today what they're doing today, all the stuff, this anti-white stuff. So what does that tell you? That tells you the Democrats didn't learn a damn thing from history. Not a damn thing. No, instead of learning from history and saying, okay, all of that was bad, so get away from identity politics, this racial division and hatred. Come together, treat everyone as individuals, bring everybody together. No, they didn't do that. No, what they want to do is they want to have today's America essentially be a mirror image of what happened in the past. They just want to put the shoe on the other foot. They didn't learn shit. And so this alt-right group that's out there, one, they're not conservative at all. In fact, they reject it. And they reject a lot of America's founding. No, the alt-right is not a bunch of idiots on Twitter or YouTube that like to use Pepe the Frog. I've seen that in some articles that say, oh, it's a bunch of people that use Pepe the Frog. No. Pepe the Frog is a cartoon frog that a lot of people who are not even close to alt-right use. Why? Because it's a smug cartoon frog that really gets under the skin of a lot of people. It just pisses them off. Which is why a lot of internet trolls will do that. Or just people in general. When it's kind of a rule of life. If people know something gets under your skin, they're going to do it because they know it pisses you off, because they like it. The alt-right is a white identitarian collectivist movement that are not conservative, and frankly they reject a lot of stuff in America's founding. And in fact, I'll prove it to you. Here is alt-right, what they consider thought leaders, Jared Taylor among them. This is them in their own words. Let's play it now.
What do you think about the present political situation in the United States from the point of view of our race?
I find it very encouraging. I think it's really breaking down along racial lines. As to the situation in general beyond politics and megapolitics, our enemies are doing everything that I would have them do. The one group that is not failing us is our enemies. They are pushing this race thing. They will not let it die. They will not leave it alone. They keep worrying it. It isn't working for them, and so their reaction is always to press down on the accelerator. If it's not working, we need to send more non-whites to Sweden. We need to have broader busing. We need to have more of a so-called conversation about race, which whites will be told how rotten and awful they are. This has created a lot of opportunities for us.
You got it? So when these radical leftist morons and the media along with them, when they press this anti-white stuff and this racial division crap, the alt-right love it. Why? Because it gets those disenfranchised young white men to sympathize with them. Because it makes them sound more legitimate when the left is actually doing the things that the alt-right accuse them of. You just heard it in their own words. And their enemies are like, well, not just the leftists, but like blacks in general, the Jews, and well, you name it. They have a lot of them. But again, you just heard it in their own words. They like it when their enemies do this because they see it as helping them. In other words, when you condemn both and call for unity, they don't like it. Now, here's more to prove that they're not conservative. In fact, they reject it all.
And I think we'll probably visit this later in the interview, but it's very important for us to get shed of old ideas and old limitations about being part of a conservative movement. We're not part of a conservative movement.
See, right there in their own words, we're not part of the conservative movement. And did you catch that bit about rejecting old ideas, rejecting traditions? You know where that comes from? That's straight out of the Communist Manifesto. The ideas of old law, morality, religion have to be rejected for they're inherently bourgeois. We reject the traditions of old. Straight out of the Communist Manifesto. In fact, if you look at these guys' policy points, the alt-right is actually quite a socialist movement. Richard Spencer, for example, who's one of the main voices, he believes in single-payer universal healthcare and believes in things like a universal basic income. They basically want socialism, but just for white people. It's essentially what it is. Here's more from that interview where they talk about why they reject the Democrat Party and why what the Democrats are doing plays right into their hands.
I agree with you, by the way, that the Democrats, the lefties, the black bloc, all of these people are behaving exactly as we would wish, in ways that will just drive people into our arms. But this new head of the Democratic Party, Perez, he's a Hispanic. His deputy is Keith Ellison, a Muslim black. Those people could not have been chosen better to send a message to the Democrats. We are not your party if you are white.
A white identitarian collectivist movement that plays on victimhood status. Well, there you go. So that's the alt-right. So what about the alt-left? How much have you heard, if you listen to the mainstream media, the idiot Democrat media, as I call them, how much have you heard about Antifa? How much have they reported on it? I mean, usually they just say, oh, they're protesters. Protest got a little out of hand. These Antifa people have been attacking Trump supporters for a long time. We're talking at least over a year. They shut down Berkeley by having a riot and lighting things on fire. And they've been getting out of hand, going right to violence. Well, you know, CNN actually did a report, and it was just one report, but they actually did a report, and it was Jake Tapper was the lead on this. And there was a journalist that actually went on the ground, not Tapper, as a female journalist, but they actually did a report, and even then, they were still putting a real light touch on it. But anyway, let's go ahead and play snippets from that report. So start off here.
In their midst was a sometimes very violent group of protesters that call themselves Antifa, known to not only clash with bigots, but also sometimes with police and occasionally storefronts. At least two journalists in Virginia were assaulted by violent counter-protesters over the weekend, including this cameraman from the Richmond CBS affiliate. CNN's Sarah Gannon now takes us inside Antifa and shows us this group like you've never seen it before.
We are meeting members of the Rose City Antifa, short for anti-fascist. This group's main goal is to disrupt neo-Nazis and white supremacists, but also take on government and capitalism.
Yes, they're communists. Don't know why CNN can't just say these Antifa are communists and they're going around causing anarchy everywhere. But of course they're not going to say that because, well, CNN is leftists who sympathize with them.
Explain to me the reasoning behind fighting.
You have to make it so unpalatable to be doing white supremacist organizing that they no longer want to do that. And historically, that's what's worked. You have to put your body in the way and you have to make it speak in a language that they understand. And sometimes that is violence.
No, she's got that backwards. This little cunt and her idiot friends in Antifa, the only language they understand is violence. They don't know how to have a civil discussion and a reasonable argument and debate. They don't know how to do it. All they know how to do is cause violence. And historically, it has not worked. There's a reason why Black Lives Matter is viewed very unfavorably by the majority of the American population. It's a reason why people see these Antifa thugs out on the street and they reject them. They think they're crazy. So no, violence does not work.
But experts who track these organizations say their membership is growing in response to the rise of white national groups and the election of President Donald Trump. Violence and property destruction led to more than 200 arrests in Washington, D.C. on Inauguration Day. Prosecutors say they were wearing masks covered head to toe in black, a tactic the Antifa call Black Bloc.
Do ordinary people dress up like ISIS and go around smashing windows, setting cars on fire, and attacking random people in the street? No, I don't think so. These Antifa are criminals. They're communists, they're anarchists, and they're a bunch of criminals, and they need to be taken out. And you know what? There's a petition going around to label Antifa as a terrorist organization, a petition to the White House. In fact, I'll link that on my website.
People dress in Black Bloc for a few things. One,
Scott Crow has been leading anarchist and militant leftist groups for decades.
So people put on the masks so that we can all become anonymous. And then therefore we are able to move more freely and do what we need to do, whether it is illegal or not.
Listen to this clown, this organizer, who's been doing this for decades, well before Trump ever became president. And this guy's saying, hey, we do this so that we can avoid the law. These people hate the cops. They hate law and order. They want to go out and just be lawless. They admit to it. And they've been doing this for decades, like this guy said. And in fact, Antifa's pretty big over in Europe. Nothing to do with Donald Trump. And you know what? Nothing to do with white nationalism either. These people are communists who want to bring down Western society.
So some people will push back on that and say that the black bloc is to keep people from being identified and arrested when they break the law, when they commit crimes.
Damn right. It's a good way to avoid the ramifications of law enforcement.
Again, I ask, do normal people go around gloating like this idiot about being lawbreakers, about being criminals? No, these people are not normal people. They're nuts. They're complete clowns. And as I said, they're a bunch of communists. They hate America. They hate capitalism. Quite frankly, they hate Western society.
Police in Berkeley told us they haven't seen this kind of destruction since the 1960s. Law enforcement in other cities are dealing with similar situations, like in Portland, Oregon, where Antifa have been involved in at least 10 protests ending in violence, according to police. And it's wearing on the community.
It is new. It's like this rumble mentality of, I'm going to bring my friends, you bring your friends, and we're going to fight it out in the park. It's not something we've seen here. It's not good for the city. People are just frustrated by it. It's affecting their livability. It's affecting their business.
Has it become more violent?
It happens quicker. The fire starting that we saw on May Day is something we haven't really seen much of in the past. The running through the street, breaking windows and everything in sight. We haven't seen it as consistently as we've seen it in the last 8 months.
Yes, exactly. And law enforcement officers, like myself, have to deal with these morons when they get out of hand. And by the way, do you think the shop owner who gets his window smashed out, do you think Antifa's helping him? No. Do you think the working class person, as they like to say, who gets their car set on fire, you think they are helped out by Antifa? No, they're not. Do you think the random person who gets beat up or stabbed, like some guy at Boston who got stabbed in the hand getting out of his car? No, they didn't help him either. And that's just it. They even did another big rally. There was a free speech rally at Boston recently, and Antifa showed up in droves. And they were fighting with the police. Boston PD reported that they were throwing bottles of urine at them. And they were fisticuffs going fighting with the police. And hundreds of them got arrested.
But it's the violence that's gotten them attention, directly confronting groups that preach white nationalist rhetoric, like on Inauguration Day, when white nationalist Richard Spencer was punched in the face. And it was the Antifa movement that caused Berkeley to cancel speeches by extreme right provocateurs like Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yes, and I remember regressive left outlet one after another who published articles about, hey, maybe it is a good thing to punch a Nazi. Hey, maybe you are justified to physically attack people with the wrong ideas. And Milo? Well, the left thinks that Milo deserved it. Why? I mean, good grief. He's just a showman. That's basically what he is. But the left, this is how they think. They think that, hey, if you got the wrong ideas, then you deserve to get attacked for it. Physically. And you certainly deserve to get smeared and tarred and get your reputation destroyed. This is how they think. So this is a report by CNN, which I'll give them credit for the fact that they reported on Antifa. But have you seen this wall-to-wall coverage, like the whole Ma Russia conspiracy hoax crap? Have you seen wall-to-wall coverage about, hey, Donald Trump condemned both sides, therefore, he's promoting the Nazis? Have you seen wall-to-wall coverage on Antifa like that? No, I don't think so. I've hardly seen this. The only reason I even saw this is because right-wing or conservative outlets have actually been reporting that, hey, CNN actually did this. They can't pussyfoot around. They've got to address this directly, and they have to call out leftist violence. We will. Well, until they do, this is only going to get worse. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break here. And when I come back, I'm going to wrap it up with a few things, particularly the new Afghanistan strategy that's been rolled out. So stay tuned, and when I come back here, Thor's Hammer Radio. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm Alex Thorson. Well, now, for the final segment, well, what should I talk about? Oh, maybe I should talk about the eclipse. Why? It happened. Great. Oh, should I talk about Steve Bannon? Why? I don't know who Steve Bannon. I don't have anything against him. Why would I get into that? Now, I'm not really interested in the whole palace intrigue, as you want to call it. That's not my forte. Right, for those of you who've listened to some of my podcasts, I'm a police officer, and I'm also a veteran, which means that my specialties are law and order, terrorism, national security, and military strategy. I was an officer in the Army, and so I've studied a lot of this stuff, and also led soldiers in combat, so I kind of know a bit about this. And I've also been over to Afghanistan, which is why I want to get into the Afghanistan strategy. So Donald Trump recently announced that he is going to go with the advice of his generals and increase troops in Afghanistan. Now, just going to give you some of the highlights of the president's strategy. This is from CBS News. So he's going to shift from the time-based approach to one based on conditions on the ground, which is good. See, one of the issues that we always faced with Obama is that Obama, who was a horrible strategist, terrible tactician, you'd never want him in command of troops. But Obama liked to micromanage everything that the military did, down to the every single airstrike out there. And the rules of engagement that he made, Obama, I remember this, Obama had us jump through hoops going through what the locals or what other countries wanted us to do. In Afghanistan, we had this thing called Karzai's 12. This would be Hamid Karzai. And there were like these 12 main rules that U.S. forces had to follow. And some of them were really stupid, like you can't go out on nighttime operations. Oh, well, people in Afghanistan think people lurking around at night, they must be criminals. That's true in every society. We have that over here. People don't go lurking around at 3 in the morning around others' houses because they're upstanding citizens, okay? But this was the kind of stuff that we had to deal with. And we had to jump through hoops just to call in, like, a damn close air support. So what the president is doing, thankfully, is that he's listening to his generals, and he's going with their approach. Donald Trump, one of the things I really like about what he's doing is that he knows full well that he himself is not a military strategist. So what he's doing is he's basically taking a hands-off approach with regards to the military, and he's giving them the green light to do what they need to do, which I can't fault him for. Some people, they've been faulting him because, well, you know, Trump, you ran on more isolationist policy and pulling out. I get that. But I can't fault Donald Trump for the fact that he's saying, hey, my generals are saying this. They know a lot more about this than I do, so I'm going to go with their assessment. Now, granted, he is the president and still ultimately responsible, but I think he's being a responsible delegator by letting his generals have what they need. So I can't fault him on that. Well, one of the things that Trump has gotten much more, or in terms of changing his approach, is in terms of Pakistan. He's escalated his rhetoric towards them and talking about improving relations with India because Pakistan harbors the Taliban. See, what's been going on in Afghanistan is that the Taliban, their headquarters, as it were, is in northern Pakistan. And I remember when I was over there, this is what they would do. So around March timeframe, you'd go from winter straight to summer. They didn't really have the four seasons over there. They just go straight from winter to summer. And when summer would roll around, the enemy would come back across the border. They'd start shooting again. And we over there, we'd be stationary on our fobs, and we'd do a little bit of hunt and kill missions, and we'd run our convoys, and we'd get some kills. And then a new battle space owner, which is the sectors, are divided into battle spaces. And the unit that was in charge of the overall sector was known as the battle space owner. And every time a battle space owner would come in, a new one, there'd be a new set of strategy, a new points bulletin that we'd have to focus on. And then once November or whatever would roll around, you'd go back into winter, the enemy would go back across into Pakistan, and we basically wait them out for the winter. And that's pretty much what it would be. I remember when I was over there, there was a non-commissioned officer who joked to me. He said, you know, Afghanistan is a year-long war that's been going on for the last 10 years. Now, when I was over there, this is 2011, so the war had been going on for 10 years at this point. And it was kind of an interesting joke. Basically, what has been going on in Afghanistan, this is the truth, is that there hasn't been an overall cohesive strategy. There has not been a overall end state to say, this is what will happen in order to achieve victory. We're always taught in the military that, if nothing else, you want soldiers to know the commander's intent and the end state. As soldiers know the commander's intent, and which is what the commander wants to do, and then the end state, which is, if we meet these objectives, meet these specific things, victory will have occurred. If your soldiers know that, they can go forward with any plan in the book, basically. Well, in Afghanistan, that hasn't been the case. And one of the problems that we've been doing is that we gave up the initiative. See, we've had people say that, oh, well, the Taliban retook the initiative. No, that's not the reality. The reality is that we, the U.S., willingly surrendered the initiative to the enemy. When you hole up on these forward operating bases, called FOBs for short, and you limit your mobility, and you're just running a few convoys here and there, clearing roads, you send out troops here and there to do, you know, hunt and kill missions, but then they come back to the FOB. What you're doing is you're deliberately limiting your mobility, especially when you have all these foreign powers that are dictating how you're going to fight. The enemy did not retake the initiative. We gave it up willingly. Anyone who's a student of military history, especially a student of von Clausewitz has these 11 principles of war, and one of them is initiative. See, my concerns for the Afghanistan strategy are not like the ones you've probably heard from a lot of other people about just troop increase or staying there longer, blah, blah, blah. It's pretty easy just to shout no war. And it's also easy just to shout, ah, bomb everything, war, war, war. Okay, I'm not one of these Ron Paul isolationists, and I'm certainly not one of these crazy neocon warmongers like a John McCain or a Max Boot type. All right, no, I'm a realist on this stuff, and I know something from actually being there on the ground. See, what's happened is that you've got these 11 principles of war that were laid out by von Clausewitz, initiative being one of them, and also U.S. Army doctrine focuses on offensive capability. The military kind of breaks it down. You've got your mobility ops, counter-mobility ops, survivability ops, and it goes forward. We've been engaging in this, what they call, they call it nation building, okay? But what's been going on is that you can't have nation building, as it were. You can't have sustainability operations in an environment where there's a perpetual state of war. See, the reason why nation building worked in post-World War II Japan and Germany is because those countries had surrendered unconditionally. In Afghanistan, you don't have that. You have a constant state of war. So you can't have this nation building, this sustainability operations in an environment that's constantly at war. You have to take the offensive. U.S. Army doctrine follows on offensive, too. There is nothing in the U.S. military in their doctrine that says, hey, the best way to win a war is to create this really cool defense line like the Maginot Line. That's not in there. No, the way that the Army doctrine works for defense is that you hold off the enemy and you keep them pinned, and then you counterattack and take them out. And then when they run, you chase after them and take them all out. So the strategy that's been going on of this sustainability, this nation building, as most people call it, it's not working. You can put as many troops there as you want, and that's not going to work, okay? Troop quantity is not a strategy. It's just an allotment of resources. What's a strategy is how you use them. Here's the tough part. The only way, realistically, that you're actually going to achieve total victory in Afghanistan against the Taliban, the way you're going to do that is you're going to have to send troops, boots on the ground, across the border into Pakistan and take them out in their home. That's the only way you're realistically going to do this. Now, whether or not we'll actually go forward and do that, that's the key issue. Because something like that is going to require congressional approval. Because in that situation, you're talking about basically violating international boundaries, going into Pakistan, and risking armed conflict with Pakistan. Because even though Pakistan they're not allied with them as a sense. They don't really like them. But here's the thing, though. Pakistan is not going to take too kindly to us going into their territory to take out the Taliban. Even though Pakistan has their own problems with the Taliban, it's going to be hard to convince them to let our troops into northern Pakistan. But see, that's the only way you're realistically going to take out the Taliban and win the war. You're not going to win it through just putting more troops in Afghanistan and doing your sustainability operations, your nation building. It's not going to work. Another thing to keep in mind, too, and I remember this from way back in the day, we were taught, and this is all propaganda, that we've never fought this kind of war before. I'm telling you right now, that is nonsense. Of course we have. We've been fighting wars like this for a long time now. Anytime someone has gone into another country, you've always had rebel elements, you've always had insurgent elements that you've had to deal with. We've been dealing with this for a very long time, all the way back into antiquity. Okay, the Mongols dealt with this, the Romans dealt with this, the Greeks, the Persians, Babylonians. It's been a long time. The truth is that the basic principles of war have never changed. What's changed is the weapons of war in which to fight them. So I honestly do hope that Trump and his generals are looking at an actual new strategy, a new way of fighting, or I should say not a new way, but going back to the tried and true method of fighting a war, of going on the offense and taking the enemy out in order to end this war quickly. Because the same crap that we were doing in Afghanistan since we drove out the Taliban in 01 all the way to now, it's not working. And for the people that say, why are we in Afghanistan? Well, let me tell you, Osama bin Laden was harbored by the Taliban in Afghanistan. The reason why he went to Pakistan is because when we went to take him out, Rumsfeld decided, hey, we'll just use special forces, which doesn't work. You don't use special forces as frontline fighters. What you do is you use them in conjunction with the frontline fighters, and you use special forces guys to take out key points and disrupt. But anyway, what Rumsfeld did is he used special forces who do not have a lot in number, not a big quantity, with local nationals, and they weren't able to surround bin Laden and his men properly, and they were able to escape from Afghanistan and into Pakistan. And it's been that way ever since, and obviously we ended up getting bin Laden, but that's the basic story of what happened. We're not in Afghanistan, you know, chasing birds or chasing squirrels. We're there for a reason, and we need to finish the job properly. The only way to do that is to go into Pakistan and take them out at their home. Until we do that, well, I'm sorry to say, but no amount of soldiers is going to really change the reality. You're going to have to break some international boundaries. You're going to have to get some major congressional approval, and you're going to have to send troops into the heartland in order to kill every single one of the Taliban. Take them out of the source. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that's going to wrap it up for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening. As always, you can catch me on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson, at Thorhammer Radio. Find me on Facebook, Thorshammer Radio, and also on Minds.com, at Thorshammer Radio. Well, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. I'm Alex Thorson with Thorshammer Radio.
Face the hammer.
Listen, everybody!